It's an update. Happy Monday. Hey, so I'm going to ramble for a little bit here. I'm going to talk about ignition interlock and the industry as I understand it. But I'm going to talk again about ITSA. I'm still working on the charge. Anyone who wants to help me develop that. The point is that it needs to be focused. I'm in the car again, by the way. I'm driving to Donnelly, Idaho to do some work for a friend of mine, a friend in the industry. Again, the entire point of ITSA is hyper-local, high-agency, independent technicians and shops who are quality first focused and providing excellent service and setting them up for success. I want to end the middleman. I want to end the need for a middleman. Right now, what service does a middleman provide? What service does a middleman manager provide in the industry? I would know because I am one. I am one right now. I have been one. I've been in the industry 10 years, okay? So right now you have the fleet owners who directly need work performed, or you've got the vendors who develop a product or service to be used by the fleet owners. And that vendor, if they own the installations, then they have to dispatch technicians to go do the installs. Many fleet owners these days manage the installations themselves. So as an independent technician, you have two primary sources of work. The vendors that provide the services and tools, platforms, and infrastructure that they sell to the fleet owners, and the fleet owners themselves who might be managing their own installs or installing in-house. So those are your two primary sources of work. I was talking to someone, really cool technician down in the San Diego area, who we got in touch, and he's a really, really cool guy, like 40 years experience in this industry, and we were talking about the direction of the industry and, you know, what I'm trying to do as far as the ITSA concept. And I was so encouraged by talking to this guy. So what's this, and I'll tell you why, but what's the point of middle management, okay? What services do they add? We are in an industry that's very niche and still is largely based off of, you know, based on reputation and management of that reputation. Okay, and what I mean by that is the purpose of a middle management company is if they are managing the installer, if they're working on building their own installer directory, I'm not faulting them for this. If they're going to invest their time and resources in building up a network, their own in-house network, their own Rolodex of technicians, and they're going to build the pipelines to feed those techs work, understandably, they want to try to keep that locked down. And they tell all of their customers, hey, here's our coverage map. Here are areas that we can cover. We've done the work and the hustle to onboard technicians in these areas. And they are open and available to do work. Send us work because we have coverage in this area and we can get it done expeditiously. And then the customer that orders work from that company knows that that company will manage the work because their own name is on the line, the name of that company. Let's go back to the example of Acme Installs, okay? So a vendor would work with Acme Installs with 200 technicians across the country because they know Acme Installs is going to do a good job. They know Acme Installs is going to take ownership of their work so that if there's an issue with a technician, Acme Installs will take steps to resolve that issue. So they know that they're getting additional management and benefit from working with a middleman. The middleman did the work of finding the technician, training the technician, bringing the technician up to the standards. The middleman is willing to jump through the vendor's hoops as far as invoicing, billing, if they have to input details into Salesforce or NetSuite or any of these other ERPs out there, any of these enterprise resource planners, every company mostly has a portal and a process. Some companies are as simple as, we just want to see a spreadsheet of the data. Those are my favorite companies to work with, because we could just create a spreadsheet, share it with them, or they created a spreadsheet, shared it with us, and they just wanted the spreadsheet populated with the job sheet details, and they're good. You know, I don't actually, most of the companies have pivoted away from that simple model. They're either requiring pictures now or something more sophisticated. On the other side of that are companies that require, you know, 7 different items at the conclusion of a simple job. And okay, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I've got one customer right now where you have to upload so many deliverables to their portal, and it's quite onerous. Anyway, so the point is, the middleman bridges the gap between what a solo technician would not be comfortable doing for every job. So they ideally make the technician's job easier. They also bridge the gap with payments by paying the tech faster than what the company gets paid. Most customers are on net 30, net 45 terms. Some of them are on like net 15 terms, which is real sweet. But most install groups will pay their technicians faster than that. Some won't, but most do. And then in very rare instances, some, which is quite smart, but untenable for a lot of technicians, some middlemen pay their technicians slower than what they get paid, which is a great boon to cash flow. I know a few install groups that get paid on net 30 terms, but pay their techs on net 45 terms, which it presents its own set of challenges, because it's great for the middleman, but the technician will be disinclined to accept work from these companies simply because they know they're not going to see payment for the work they perform for up to 45 days after the work is done. But anyway, that's generally the service of the middle manager, is to add an interface layer between onboarding technicians, catching them up to speed on the expectations, managing the revenue cycle for those technicians, managing the billing and invoicing for the customer who requested the work. That's a great service, and I know what it's like to be a middle manager, because I am one. I have been one. I've been in this industry 10 years. Being a middle manager, I would say, probably since 2020-ish or slightly before, as far as working directly with vendors. It's not like I've been around this industry like any significant amount of time. Like, the people, others have been in this industry like since before I was born, right? And those are the real OGs, and they're especially the ones that are, you know, don't become divas or prima donnas, but keep a hustler, go get 'em attitude. Those are the ones that I really, really want to set up for success. So I don't want to just be a middle manager at my company, Titan Voltage, okay? And part of that is because, quite frankly, I don't feel like I'm adding, through Titan Voltage per se, a unique value to the industry that my quote-unquote competitors are not also adding. I already like commiserated on the first episode of It's an Update some of the lamest things that have occurred for me in the industry as a middleman. Is the most tragic thing is costing someone work, costing an independent tech some work that they were willing to do, but I just couldn't schedule it fast enough because I was also in the field doing some work. And I've gone through ebbs and flows and phases of having, you know, five schedulers in the office and them doing great work. And then I've gone through times where it's just been me, just solo. That's very rare. I mean, ever since I started the company, I've always had someone in the office helping me. So that's not really reflective of reality. But we've got several people in our office right now working together on this initiative. But sometimes you just, like, we had an instance where I was in the field and managing projects. One of our other, you know, main coordinators, project managers, was in the field and managing large projects. And we had a customer that sends us such a low volume of work that we haven't trained anyone else on how to manage that customer or, you know, set up a pipeline for that customer. So that customer, you know, emailed us asking us to perform some work. And we simply just said, look, this is in our queue. We will get to it when we can. But, you know, we didn't get to it as fast as that customer wanted us to. And so they had to reassign to a different vendor. And now it's the likelihood that they'll send us more work, even though they were only sending us like 7 tickets a year, super low volume, not even worth it. But the point is, if we wanted to invest and maintain that relationship, it's now harder to do so because they'll always remember, oh, Titan Voltage was slow to schedule this work, or they didn't schedule this work. So we're going to think twice next time we have an opportunity for them. But the real tragedy was the local tech that was in that area was more than willing to do the work. But we just simply didn't have time to set it up. That's why with the systems that we're proposing for It's a Network, it solves this in so many ways. I don't want to be a middle manager or a gatekeeper of other people's work. And for my personal reasons, I'll give you 2 more reasons why that's the case. The boom or bust cyclical nature of this industry is such that you'll go through a month of having thousands of installs in the pipeline. Thousands and thousands and thousands, and lots of techs doing great work. And after that, there might be a dry spell for a bit. It's just the nature of it. You know, these companies really only do a large deployment or changeover maybe, let's say, once every 3 years. And a lot of times they'll stick with the same vendor. So they might not, you know, there might be 6-8 years between a large deployment. So it's like, okay, we need to scale now. We need to scale rapidly, quickly. So we scale and ramp up to accommodate a large project. But then after the project's done, the pipeline turns off. And then it's a matter of all those techs that ramped up to assist on the project. They're like, wow, that was great. We made lots of good money. And we're ready for the next one. And it's like, well, I'll let you know when the next one hits, right? So it's like you scale up your office, which means you've got people you need to provide for now. I'm saying way too much. I'm going to work on getting rid of that. Mark this down. I'm going to work on getting rid of that. You scale up your office to accommodate a project. You scale up the technicians in your network to accommodate a project. The work may or may not be there. So you're managing the volume of 3 entities. You've got your office with largely fixed operating costs. You've got your technicians who need work and want work and are willing to do the work. You've got the vendors who supply the work or the fleet owners who have a need for the work. Getting all of those, I'll call it a supply chain, to align and scale and match can be difficult. It's almost like you're playing whack-a-mole, and each time you whack-a-mole, it's like enhancing that pipeline or network. It's like, okay, I got to infuse some energy into the tech network. I got to infuse some energy into the marketing network. I got to infuse some energy into, you know, you get the point. The other thing that's hard is, like, we're not, like, super, like, we don't have a massive line of credit. So sometimes when you've got a bunch of large projects out on net 30, net 45 terms, I got to have that hard talk with some techs and say, hey, man, we were waiting for some checks to come in. They're not in yet, so we're going to have to, you know, hold back this portion until next week when we have some more checks hitting. And I hate having those conversations. You know, that's my biggest pet peeve when that sort of a difficult time period has to occur, okay? So that's frustrating when that occurs. So, sorry, I'm just rambling as I'm driving here, aren't I? Those are some of the challenges. Now, managing the tech network is another difficult challenge. And here's why. I have dozens and dozens of amazing technicians. I've got their back, they've got mine. They do great work. They take pride in their work. It's great. It's incredible. And I find so much value and fulfillment in that relationship. But there are some techs who couldn't care less, and you don't know that. You don't know the good ones from the bad ones initially. You can get hints. You can get hints, but there are some cases where you may not be able to detect all of the idiosyncrasies and maligned priorities from your initial vetting, conversations, training. And sometimes more ways than one. Like, you might be working with a technician who has the technical expertise but not the personal management habits. So you are working with a tech you've worked with for years, and you book them to do a job. Morning of the job, they say, I'm broke, my electricity's shut off, my car tires are flat, I can't get to the job that starts in 30 minutes unless you advance me some funds right now. And those are the type of calls or texts that really give you anxiety as a middle manager. Because it's like, through no fault of my own, I did everything to lay this up and set this up to have a successful day. But you get to a point where you feel like you're on call all of the time and that you can't even leave. Like, I don't even feel like I can leave cell service for a day with my family on the weekend, because it's like, I don't know what's coming across my desk that's a fire that if I don't address it, the tech's going to do something wrong in the field. As far as like, what if a tech says, hey, I'm stuck, I can't get a hold of anyone, I drove 3 hours to get to this job site, no one's picking up, I tried all the numbers that were on the job sheet, the work order, no one's picking up, I need to know what to do. And if you're out of cell service, and I mean, obviously, of course, the procedures are set, but either the tech doesn't remember the procedures or they didn't read all the instructions. Now that tech, let's say, can't get a hold of you, they leave and they want to be paid mileage, but they also didn't do any work and they no-showed on some work. So you get my point. Like, if I don't pick up the call or have another project manager or coordinator pick up the call, then there's potentially a host of billing issues and wasting people's time as a result of the inability to communicate priorities and expectations. So that's one of the things that, for me personally, I'm not a fan of being a middle manager, because you have to feel like you're on call all of the time. Another thing personally is I committed to my wife that I was going to do my best not to travel anymore. You know, we've got 4 kids, and within the last 10 years, really the last 5 years, Alaska is the only state that I haven't traveled to. I've traveled to all 50 states except for Alaska, including Hawaii, to do work. And some families are able to make it work. You know, my family is not one of those. It's not a great situation. I don't like being away from the family. I don't like not being home every evening. Some people are able to hustle and make it work. You know, my wife, bless her, has been patient with me as I've had to travel. And, you know, with my commitment to her to try not to travel, as a middle manager, you have to be willing to travel anywhere you are responsible for work. And with my company, Titan Voltage, I have to be willing to travel anywhere Titan Voltage is responsible for doing work. I had situations like early on, this is like years and years and years ago, where like I flew somewhere for two installs because they were super high priority and my local guy had a conflict come up, couldn't make it. I flew out to do two installs, losing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars. That's an exaggeration. I think I was upside down on it, like $600 or so. But I did it because it was a high priority, high profile, and the customer had a great need. And my local guy wasn't available, so I flew out to do it. You have to be willing to, in my opinion, you have to be willing to go wherever is, you know, you're responsible for the work. So those are the challenges of middle management. Now, if I were to scale up to the point where I had many different people responsible for many different things, one person responsible for handling all of the tech stuff, or a team of people responsible for doing all the project management, a team of people available for doing scheduling, and this, that, and the other, eventually I would get to the point where I wouldn't personally have to travel, or I personally wouldn't be the bottleneck to do work. But again, it doesn't alleviate that pressure or responsibility of constantly having to provide for my people. Like, you have to lay it up such that you have someone who's responsible for marketing and sales, for filling up the pipeline. You have someone who's available, or a team who's available for filling up the pipeline, for feeding the technicians work, for managing the technicians, training the technicians, and managing the vendor relationships. You can set all of this up to where you remove yourself from the equation. But for me personally, I don't necessarily want to do that. I just feel like I'm being led in a different direction, because it was never my goal in this industry to start just another middle manager company. It was never my goal to start just another install group. Then you're all just competing on who's doing the best job. And I'll tell you one thing, my quality and customer service and communication personally is unrivaled. Other than those warriors who have their private client list that no one knows about, other than that, like, companies would fly me out, like, understand this, they would fly me personally out as a 1099 independent contractor to repair and fix relationships and installs that their own in-house technicians, their own W-2 technicians, scuffed. So, like, companies would send me to fix relationships and installs that their own in-house guys did on really important pilots that lead to tens of thousands of vehicles. They'd send me to go fix it, like, and I'd be sent all over to do pilots and, you know, meet with customers and everything. And for me, it is difficult when, like, I follow the golden rule where I'm not going to ask anyone to do anything that I personally wouldn't be willing to do. But the problem is, I've assumed too much that people are also willing to make the sacrifices I make. So if I know there's a difficult job and I know how I would do it and the attention to detail and care I would put into it, I assume everyone would, within reason. But the definition of what's within reason is different. When you have a technician who says, I'm not comfortable with this, and it's like, well, what have you done to make yourself comfortable? It's like, well, I haven't done anything. It's just I'm not comfortable with it, and I'm not willing to become comfortable with it. You know, and they just throw in the towel and leave it high and dry. And that's not all the technicians. There are many technicians that'll, through grit and determination, stick it out. And that's how I thrived in the industry was, you know, pretty much everything I'm doing is self-taught just from spending hours troubleshooting stuff. Like, in my early days, I would spend hours, like literally hours, troubleshooting a single three-wire install. I can name one example where, but there are many like this, where I was troubleshooting a single three-wire CalAmp install for a customer. And I spent hours with one support rep, I can still name who it was, with one support rep from the telematics vendor as they were checking the firmware, looking on the back end. It was a CalAmp LMU2630 device that a company was reselling. They were white labeling it. But I spent hours in my very early days on the phone with that support rep to the point where I remember his name. He's a connection with me on LinkedIn. He's long since left the industry, but I, you know, we bonded over that and it was great. But again, I don't get paid extra as an independent contractor. And a lot of, like, for that. So, like, I spent, a lot of people would say I wasted those hours because, you know, I spent three hours just troubleshooting a three-wire install 2.5 hours away from my house. And, you know, that was subcontracted work going through a middleman. So, like, they paid me, like, $40 for it. Because it was just a three-wire troubleshoot, you know? But the issue that was being experienced is it was an old asset. It was an old truck. So the battery voltage would drop to sub 9 volts on crank. But it wasn't necessarily so much due to the health of the battery. It was like by design. Like, I think if you switched out that... if you switched out the components of that truck with new batteries, I doubt it would make any meaningful difference long term. Like, it was just an old truck. It was like early 90s, late 80s. It was like a Kenworth or a Peterbilt or something. I can't remember. But it dropped below 9 volts on crank. And it was causing the CalAmp unit to go through resets because on that LMU2630, there was no internal battery. So I had my meter out and most of the issue was not like hardware wise. I just reported to the representative from the manufacturer what I was reading with my multimeter. The actual tech work that I did was very minimal because it was very simple and straightforward. I tested the ground constant and switched at the Molex going into the LMU2630 to rule out any problems in line with the power harness or wiring. Like, you can test the source wires on the vehicle, but that doesn't tell you if you're having signal degradation going through the inline fuse holder. Sometimes inline fuse holders off the manufacturer line get gunked up with a whole bunch of plastic in between the spades. so it can affect the signal, the amperage, the voltage going to the device. Or it might not connect at all. I've seen that happen as well. The point is, I didn't get paid anything extra for that. I was sent to do a simple three-wire troubleshoot. And like I said, the technical side was very straightforward. But it was me just sitting on the phone with that vendor representative as they were checking the back end and the firmware and everything required. And they took a long time to do that. And they kept saying, try a different harness. Try this. Try this. And I'm like, guys, that's not going to change anything. Like, I hooked up my meter directly to the vehicle battery. And I'm like, dude, this thing is reading sub 9 volts on crank. There's no way around it. And they're like, tell the customer to get a new battery. And I'm like, done. Like, cool. I told them to get a new battery. But it was an agriculture company with really old trucks. Like, the motivation is to just keep this thing running as long as possible without having to spend a bunch of extra money on maintenance. So an old agriculture company, if they have an old truck that's working fine otherwise, it's just the unit's going through a lot of power cycles and resets, which eventually causes it to fail tracking. It's like, it's a tall ask to have them drop, you know, $1,000 into batteries or something when the truck works otherwise. It's like you'd have more luck just saying, hey, add a capacitor and an internal battery to your unit. Why not? Why not send them a new unit that has an internal battery and can moderate the power cycles, the fluctuation? Oh, man, this is the pacing on this episode sucks. I'm debating on just deleting it and starting over. Anyway, but I don't know. Maybe if someone finds it interesting, moving forward, I will try to keep a better pacing. I'm just, like I said, I'm driving from Boise, Idaho to Donnelly, Idaho right now. And I apologize for rambling so much. So I'm going to separate my thoughts on these episodes. I'm going to stop this one, start a new one talking about ignition interlocks. So chalk this episode up to a summary of why I don't want to be a middle manager, why I don't like middle managers, because they're unnecessary in today's age. It looks a lot different. The opportunities that are available today look a lot different than in the past. Okay, so let me take some of the things that I pointed out and quickly address how ITSA can fix those. So basically, I mentioned the value that a middle manager adds to the industry. Taking ownership of their work, managing the onboarding of technicians, it's one 1099 that the vendor can cut to that install group rather than all the individual 1099s for the individual technicians that are in that network. So there are some real value adds here, but ultimately those value adds can now be achieved without middle management, because it's just like a duplication of effort in the pipeline. It's like most of these install groups, most of these vendors, install departments, are already doing the work that the middle management install coordinators are doing. Like, it might make sense to have install coordinators work with a company that doesn't have an installation department in-house. That might make sense. But when you have someone talk to sales, talk to, you know, I've already gone through the various handoffs in a conventional pipeline in the industry, and it's so inefficient and unnecessary when ultimately it's the fleet owner that knows what they want done, or the vendor ordering the work, and should be able to communicate that directly to the technician without a whole bunch of, you know, issues. So one is reputation management and technician vetting. So being able to have reviews on technicians' work that are public or shared, that follow the technician around to provide a higher degree of accountability. A technician knows, I don't want to burn this bridge because it's going to be sticky. I can't burn a bridge and just run away from it and move somewhere else, like move on. Like, it'll follow me, right? But the thing is, we've already pre-vetted for that with ITSA, because the technicians already know this is my own company to be set up for with success. Like I said, Titan Voltage is like my middle management company, but I also operate under that name individually. But I just bought the URL. What is either Install Idaho or Idaho Install? I can't remember which. But that'll be a DBA off of the Titan Voltage name, and that's going to be what I'm going to have as the flagship ITSA shop to lead by example. I'm getting some new business cards made. I'm going to get out there, hustle. My goal, like I've mentioned in the past episode, is to know every fleet in my valley and what they use. That's my entire goal. And I'm talking to other technicians that are really good here locally and trying to encourage them to catch my vision of this, because the industry needs it. The industry needs it. So how do we solve the earlier problems? First of all, technicians' quality is better because they self-vet themselves. And since it says optimized for quality and people who are willing to go above and beyond to preserve and protect their company name, which is their name, quality is controlled, reputation's controlled, everybody's insured, everybody has their own policy. Now, the only value for middle managers becomes still to operate like a bank. If someone wants to create a service where the whole point of the service is to pay techs faster than they get paid, that's a real value that techs might be willing to part with some of their margin to work through that interface. A middle manager becomes an interface when they remove some of the responsibilities mentioned earlier. So what do I mean by that? There's a lot of vendors out there with their own in-house installation department who would be unwilling to play directly. Some would be willing to play within the ITSA ecosystem, but others are so stuck in their early 2000s mindset. Some are so stuck there and so married to their own processes that they just want to work with an install group. That's where something like Titan Voltage comes in, or Acme Installs, or any of these others. But they become less of a middle manager and more of just a connector or an interface, where it's like, yeah, basically just hire a bunch of people to just sit there, take your requests, take the requests that come to the install group, turn around and plug them into the ITSA ecosystem via a vendor. Like Titan Voltage will be a vendor in the ITSA ecosystem for supplying technicians with work, but other vendors are welcome and encouraged to join. That's the whole model, is opening this up, lowering the barrier to entry, making this network of independent technicians accessible for everybody, including the competitors of Titan Voltage. Like, that's the goal. I don't want to be the gatekeeper. I don't want to be the gatekeeper, or prevent a willing tech from getting work. So if the competitors to Titan Voltage sign up to use the TechNet network, that's great. That's great. That fills up the technician's pipeline with work, which is what I want to do. I want to optimize for providing high quality opportunities to high quality technicians. And other companies have access to way more opportunities than just through Titan Voltage, because other companies are willing to do the song and the dance that Titan Voltage is not willing to do. So yeah, all these companies out there, sign up to be a supplier of work to the ITSA network. But my focus is Install Idaho is going to be a flagship shop for the ITSA network, leading by example, getting out there, doing monthly meetings with my local chapter, getting everyone together in whatever medium makes sense for everybody to talk shop, talk what are some services, what are some challenges you're having in the industry, and how do we overcome those? Anyone else have similar challenges, need help with a project? Especially because as technicians are focusing on local work, but they are still making the transition and still doing a lot of traveling, you might have some techs that have local clientele built up and local pipelines built up, but if they have to go out of town for 3 weeks on a project, they can call on their other local ITSA chapter members and say, hey, can you help this customer out that's my local customer, but I have to go out of town for a bit. Can you take the reins and help them provide great service while I'm gone? You get the point. It helps to have great friends in the industry. So anyway, there are companies that will be unwilling to book technicians directly, book ITSA technicians directly. And so middle manager should be able to provide a bridge or a connection to connect the ITSA community to that supplier of work. That's still a valid service, but I hope that will go away eventually. I hope that any middle manager working in the ITSA ecosystem will work with the objective of eventually removing themselves like I have, because I recognize the inefficiencies of the multi-step communication. And like anyone who says this will hurt me long term, I don't think so. I really don't. And to hear more about my philosophy on that, you got to hear the first episode. I believe increased efficiency will help everybody on every level, even if it looks like it's temporarily hurting me. If I were to completely remove or replace myself from the industry without making money on that removal, I would still have satisfaction knowing that I affected the industry for good and improved efficiency. And if there was ever a need for me to not be in the industry, either as an independent technician, I'm going to talk more about interlocks in the next episode, but one of my interlock buddies sent me a link from a website in PA where they're saying ignition interlock devices are not safe, they need to go away. And I'll tell you why. People have been saying that for years, and it's just moved the needle in the other direction. More states are becoming first offense states where you have to get an ignition interlock for your first DUI offense. Why is that happening? It's because the companies that sell these devices and the organizations with which they work, like Mothers Against Drunk Driving, they are all powerful companies with their own lobbyists who are under the same pressure that Titan Voltage is under to supply work to their people. So I wouldn't worry about people saying these things are unsafe, they're gonna go away. Someday they might. Just like in the telematics space, people have been saying that the need for install is gonna go away because these devices are gonna get so simple. So yeah, people have been saying that for decades. It might eventually happen, but probably not. I don't think they will. And I'll tell you why. Plug-and-play systems are far more common now, the geotabs and such, than what they used to be. Even with a Y cable. Watch a couple videos, you know how to install it. Customers can do the same thing. They can watch a couple videos and learn how to install it. A few reasons why they won't, or typically don't, is they don't have the in-house resources or the time, or quite frankly, they just don't want to bother with it. And remember, all these telematics vendors are competing for the business. Lytx is competing against Samsara, is competing against Motive. They're all competing to win the business, which means they are motivated to compete against each other to provide the best service, which means many of these install groups include the install as part of the competition. Because if three of the vendors are including install and the fourth one isn't, and the price point's nearly the same, they're going to lose that deal unless they also include it. Unless all of the vendors eventually come together and say, we're all going to push for self-install, which is totally fine if they do that. Because again, so first of all, you have the pressure of all the telematics vendors trying to provide the best product and best service and compete against their other companies in the space. Not only do you have that pressure, you have the fleet owner that may not have the scalability to have their internal technicians, if they have any. Let's say they have internal shops. They may not have the scalability where they're already using their shops efficiently to add in telematics installation, even if it's just simple plug and play. The other thing is, the internal company may not want the liability or think that it may void their warranty if they do it in-house and don't use professional third-party installers. So there's many reasons why professional installs are sticking around. But one of the biggest things that saved or preserved the install industry are the advent of AI dash cameras, because they're a little harder to install than a under the dash geotab plug and play, because you have to know the right place to put it for the maximum optimal visibility on the windshield. And I hate to say it, but there's typically no right answer. There's no one right answer. You want to avoid, if it's dual facing, you want to avoid the driver's visor or the passenger's visor, depending on what you're trying to accomplish, so they can't block the camera view. But you can't put it so low that it obstructs the driver's view, and you can't put it where they can twist the rear view mirror to block the view. But you also can't put it where, like I said, it obstructs too much of the driver's view. I've had some companies say, we want our camera outside of the windshield wiper sweep, so the windshield wiper won't obstruct the view of the camera. I've had other companies say, most of them, in fact, 95% of them say they want the camera within the windshield wiper sweep, so that the windshield wiper can clean the windshield in front of the outward facing camera. But the point is, you have all of these considerations that someone self-installing may not think of. They may have to remount the camera several times as a result of, also depends on the camera lens. Is it fisheye wide angle, or is it a narrow field of view? Knowing all of these things is important, and it makes it so there's no one right answer for every situation, no one size fits all. So adding AI cameras to the space has greatly perpetuated the need for an installer, as well as people eventually realize we want more than just an outer and inner facing view of the driver's cabin in front of the vehicle. We want a 360 system. It makes sense. We want side cameras and rear cameras for optimal visibility, for insurance claims, for everything else. I've heard crazy stories from my customers, and I've seen crazy footage. One of my customers was able to use their dash cam footage to absolve themselves of a different type of liability because a fight broke out, literally throwing fists on a job site. And they were able to use the footage from the vehicle, unrelated to the vehicle, were able to use the footage from the vehicle in order to provide the investigators the information they needed to understand who was at fault for this literal fist fight that broke out. Also, I've seen, even though it's only in the cab, dash cameras can often detect a rear end collision simply by lurching from park. So you've got a dash camera, you just powered off the vehicle, the camera hasn't stopped recording yet. Not all cameras are created equal. The good ones, you know, will record for a minute after you turn off the vehicle, and it's configurable in your dashboard. So let's say you stop somewhere, you turn off the vehicle, wham, someone hits you from behind. You're able to still absolve yourself of liability from simply looking at the view lurching in the front. It's like, okay, I can tell there was a rear end collision because of the way this view lurched. But many fleets are opting for a 360 camera solution, which definitely requires professional installation. So cameras really made the longevity of this industry further solidified. All of that to say, there's a lot of opportunity out there for installers moving into 2025 and beyond. But should there ever be a time where they are no longer needed, then we will all rejoice in the increased efficiency. Great. Anyway, I know a lot of people will disagree with that, but it all comes down to the concept of preserving inefficiency for job protection and creation, or willing to grow past and move beyond a role because it's been replaced due to process improvement and increased efficiency. I want the gatekeepers, middle managers, people protecting information and keeping it from others. Those are the barriers I want to cast down. Those are the things I want to remove. So I ended up talking more about the telematics industry and the opportunities available to technicians, and how we can provide the same value of middle management without middle managers. It can be done, and we're trending in that direction. I'm just trying to push it along and help. Again, with the goal of providing hyper-local technicians with high-quality work to high-quality technicians and filling up their calendars and giving them more opportunities to be a rock star and find fulfillment in this telematics installation space. As well as connecting everybody together to supply the techs with more work, incentivizing and encouraging the technicians to increase their direct work pipeline as well. I can't tell you how many deals I've had by building a great relationship with a fleet owner, and then they switch companies and they give us a call to do the deployment with a new vendor we hadn't worked with previously. There's a lot of vendors besides the ones that do installs in-house. There's a lot of vendors. I came across a company, I wish I could remember the name. I can't remember the name, but I called up a regional electric company, a contractor, commercial electric contractor. And I said, who do you use for your telematics? And it was a name I had never heard of. And I'm like, that's wild for me to hear a name I've never heard of. And I hopped on their website, and they'd been in business for a very long time. And I called them up, and I'm like, do you guys have an install department? And they're like, we do all of our installs in-house with W-2 technicians. Like, wow, that's awesome. Like a regional vendor with their own hardware. They weren't white labeling anything. I'm like, well, it could have been CalAmp now that I think about it. But the point was, it was a telematics vendor with their own hardware or white labeled solution that they used W2 techs to install in house. I was like, wow, that's awesome. I mean, it's really cool that they do that. So at least I think so. It's not very scalable. Like, good luck if you have you bag a huge deal and you don't have enough W-2 techs to accommodate it. That's a challenge for them. But I thought that was really good to know that there's companies out there that still operate like that. But they just have to be selective on what deals they accept, because they simply can't accommodate scalable work. All right, I'm going to pause this and do a new episode on interlocks. I'm going to go ahead and upload this anyway. Sorry for rambling. Sorry for the slow pace. My interlock episode is going to be a lot quicker. If you're a technician and you listen to these episodes, feel free to record your own and send it to me and say, hey, Spencer, you should upload this on ITSA. I'll give it a listen. And feel free to contribute. And thanks for listening. I'm still working on getting something meaningful in place for ITSA-shops. I have the .org and .com top-level domain names. I'm going to redirect one to the other. Don't know yet if I want to do com or org, maybe both. Anyway, stay cool. I'm driving through beautiful Idaho between Boise and Donnelly on a foggy, cloudy, fresh rain morning, end of April 2025. This is my favorite part of all of the windshield time I've put into this job, is just being able to turn on a podcast or just be alone with my thoughts as I drive through and see some of the most outrageous scenery. I mean, like I said, I'm so grateful to have been able to travel to all states except Alaska. And just, man, just the things I've seen and been able to do, like, I wish I could take a picture of what I'm seeing right now, but I can't. Number one, because I'm driving. Number two, I just wouldn't be able to do it justice. Also because I'm using, like, brown tinted sunglasses, which really makes green pop. So green's popping. I'm just grateful. I'm just grateful to be able to see this right now. Like I said, low fog, but the sun is just cresting the hills. So there's this bright orange glow, and everything's greening up with spring. The snow's all melted. We just had fresh rain yesterday. Really is spectacular. Wish you could see it. All right. Thanks, guys. See ya.